This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Lots happening in the world of the NFL, Dave. A lot of things happening. Coaching staffs just being assembled, some being dismantled. You know, we got our guy Dan Quinn, who's taken his name out of consideration. He wants to remain the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys. You think that really translates to Jerry Jones behind the scenes going, all right, I'll throw another million your way. Stay here.
Why not, man? I'm telling you, well, here's another thing. I think that some of the coaches are, it's almost in line with like some of the quarterbacks or, you know, whatever. It's a highly sought after free agent where I'm like, if you're really happy where you are and you're mm-hmm. making $12 million and you got a family and you're rooted, you know, you've got like roots. Who was it we were talking to? Was it Noah? Was it Fant? Was it
about
Fant that was telling us that he had roots in Denver? Like he was really.
Oh, that he had. Yeah,
or maybe it was Shelby.
No, I think it was Noah. Did he? I think maybe he bought a place or something.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have roots there. And then, you know, somebody comes and offers you like an extra million or two. Like, that's a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
But if you're making $7 million, $6 million, whatever, $5 million, and somebody says, rip up your family and sell your house and move your kids and everything, and we'll pay an extra $2 million. It might be like one of those deals. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Jerry Jones and, you know, and really just in general, owners that are willing to spend because there's no salary cap for coaches.
No. And that's what you assume happens, right? Why would you enter into all these conversations? He had three different interviews talking about Dan Quinn. And then all of a sudden you see that he's removing his name from consideration. He's no longer seeking that. He wants to remain as the defensive coordinator of the Cowboys. I'm like, okay, so Jerry opened up the pocketbooks is right. What happened there. I find it hard to believe he was, you know, invested, excited, taking these interviews, flying to wherever and talking to these teams and then just going, you know what? I don't think I want a head coach. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, and look, Dan Quinn's been a head coach.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for Atlanta for, what, 6 years there. And so he's got a taste of that, and maybe he's happy down there. I think if you're down in Dallas and, you know, their defense, as you mentioned, played really well over the weekend, you know, you're pretty happy. I bet you Jerry Jones is not a bad guy to work for if you're having success.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I sent you guys an article the other night that there was a story out there that Dan Quinn was looking at taking that Denver job and wanted to bring Daryl Bevel with him as his offensive coordinator.
How about that?
The reunion of Daryl Bevel, Dan Quinn, and Russell Wilson. How crazy would that have been?
Well, and I never got the sense of Bevel and Russ butt heads or what. I felt like
Bevel was with the fan base. And I guess maybe some of the players after the Super Bowl, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah, maybe a little, well, defensive players.
Yeah.
Guys.
All right. Richard Sherman. Okay.
Yeah.
Now that we've narrowed it down, but yeah, so that's, you know, hey, good for him. If he's happy, he's making the money he wants to make. Good for him. You know, it's just interesting that he's a prime candidate. And then all of a sudden you read he's no longer interested. So.
Yeah. Dan Quinn goes back to Jessamyn McIntyre. Her dad, Bobby, was a coach. And I think that they coached together at it was at Hofstra.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where Jess's dad, Bobby, was, you know, so he started off at William & Mary as a D-line coach, and then he went to VMI, Hofstra. I'm always fascinated by this, Bob, because you look at where these people have been and how their path, like they all start out with crap jobs.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, and I think like if I mention somebody like I'll say every once in a while, like Dave Pearson, who's the vice president for the Seahawks and their mm-hmm. media, that, you know, that he started off as an intern.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of maybe some people are like, oh, I don't want to mention that or whatever. I'm like, that's awesome to me. That's awesome that you climbed all of that. You always talk about, you told us a few stories about, you know, where you started getting coffee and donuts for people and things like that. Yeah, you got to be proud of that, right?
Yeah. I was out there, you know, renting movies back in the day before you could download them from YouTube. You had to rent the movie to get a little sound bite. So I'd have to drive to Blockbuster because they wanted this drop from a movie.
Oh, is it, wow.
Oh, yeah. I'd come in
Get it off the internet, Bob?
No, not then. Not then. Yeah, if we want to talk about the new Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, go get it, Bob.
Yeah.
All right. You know, so I was like, that was the gopher. That's how I started, man.
But that's you look at these coaches, and that's what happens. So a lot of times, why is he qualified? Why did they hire him? Blah, blah, blah. Well, go look at where he's been, and you tell me he hasn't put his time in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, one guy that people felt, this is a great transition, Dave. Yeah. One guy that people felt didn't pay his dues as it pertains to coaching was Jeff Saturday. He just was plucked from the TV studio and given the head coaching job, the interim head coaching job with the Indianapolis Colts. And, when something you get fired midseason, it's a bad situation. You're not whoever they bring in is not taking over a Super Bowl contender at that point. So I think people need to manage expectations. But he took a lot of grief. And anytime he made a decision that was questioned, he's just a big, dumb guy. And what were they doing? Well, the Colts are looking for a head coach, and apparently, you know, he's being reported as one of the four finalists for the job. And there's a segment of the fan base that have started a petition through change.org titled, "Don't Hire Jeff Saturday as Head Coach." So they've got
that's pretty specific.
They've got
.com.
Yeah, it launched, the day it launched, they got like 900 verified signatures right out of the gate. And I was like, really? There's that strong a sentiment against the guy? I mean, they were floundering in a way that caused them to fire the previous head coach, who's now another head coach in Frank Reich. But, you know, what did you really expect to see from him? All of a sudden you were going to go to the Super Bowl? Your team's a disaster. That's why the head coach was fired. Whoever was coming in was taking over a sinking ship here.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it was our national over the weekend. It was some of our national broadcasting that we run sometimes on weekends, Saturdays and Sundays. And one of the, I can't remember what the stat was, but it was like, don't take an interim coaching job. Like it's a death sentence. Like you're not going to get rehired. You're not, you're put into the worst situation, you know, and especially going from, it's like we talk about, well, there's a better quarterback out there. Let's bring him in. Remember there was talk about Cam Newton a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you've got guys here that already know the system. Yeah. Cam's really athletic and this, that, and the other, but you know, you have to relearn the whole system. I mean, you bring in a new head coach, he's going to have to look, like the first thing he's doing is probably looking at the roster, going, okay, what number is this guy? And where, I mean, you're just automatically behind the eight ball. And so, yeah, I think it's a tough situation for a guy like that. But I wonder if he goes just back into coaching, or, you know, does he try to get a job somewhere else, Jeff Saturday, if he doesn't, or does he go back into the booth?
Yeah, I don't. I.
That's
a great question,
TV, right? For NFL Network, I think
easy job. Nobody's tearing apart every moment that he speaks and every decision he makes.
Yeah,
it's kind of a thankless job. I know there's a lot of money that comes with it, but boy, you long nights. You always talk about the lights are on when you leave. The lights are on when you show up at the facility. The coach is there the whole time. It's, you know, yeah, great money, but you're there to be fired eventually. You know, very few guys have that super long run like Mike Tomlin or now Pete Carroll or Belichick. Those are the rarities. You know, these guys are kind of brought in to be fired at some point down the road. But it just,
I'm fairly articulate, Bob, and I do have some football background. I would never be a coach.
Because the hours or the demands or what?
Ridiculous amount of time that they put in, man. I mean, it's crazy. The one, the payoff and the reward is being with the guys,
right?
You know, and I loved coaching high school football, man. You just whatever their names are or whoever they are, they just become your guys, you know, and it's like they're everything. And, you know, and that I love that part of it. It is one of the most involved because you're really dealing with people directly. You know, and dealing with more people than most people in their jobs, right? So, yeah, it takes a special guy. And that's why I've always just loved coaches. And I'm, you know, sort of loathe to criticize coaches just because I know how hard they work. But, you know, yeah, sometimes you have somebody who You know, like, I don't know if Jeff Saturday is qualified or not, but I know that he was under the microscope on a lot of the, was it the Minnesota game where they had like a ridiculously huge comeback? Yeah. Yeah, there was a point in that game where they could have punted it and they went for it, or they could have kicked a field goal or something anyway. And it was like, okay, offensive line mentality. He's a center. He was like, yeah, we can pick up an extra. They didn't. And then all of a sudden the deluge of points all of a sudden hits, you know, rains down on him. And then look at they lose one of the worst. Was it like the worst, like the biggest comeback in NFL history or something?
Yeah.
Like that.
What were they, 33 to nothing?
Second biggest.
31?
Second unfortunately biggest. Aware of the biggest.
Oh, you are?
Oh, the Bills came back against the Oilers, 35 points. Bills, yeah, it was 33-0 at halftime.
Maybe and you were halftime. Fans of the Bills at the time, that time?
You know I'm a fan of the Oilers. Oilers, Titans. That okay, one makes Oilers. Sense. That's not a new team.
All right. Wait, it makes sense that you were rooting for them?
Well, it's my team. It's not a new team.
It's your team?
Yeah.
How many teams do you call my team?
I don't call that many teams my team. That's the misperception.
Houston Oilers, the Tennessee Titans.
That's the same team. That's why I'm a Titans fan, because I was an Oilers fan.
Syracuse, the Washington Huskies, Purdue. Who
and
else?
That's it.
The Tampa Bay Lightning.
No, there's teams. Tampa Bay, thank you. Yeah. What about teams down in Texas?
The Seattle Kraken, the Seattle Mariners, the Seattle Seahawks.
He just thinks they're just okay, the Kraken.
Yeah, there's just a lot of... Just saying your rooting interests are spread far and wide. That's all. You're casting a big net out there. Yeah.
And right. Yet somehow I'm still always disappointed.
Yeah, I know.
I told you they're going to lose. All right. Sorry. We got derailed there.
Yeah. So, all right. Taking a look at some of the other stories. I sent you guys this one last night. This is nuts, man. So we're all looking forward to the games this week, and I can't wait to watch them. I'll enjoy watching them from my couch. But you look at the price tag attached to this game coming up this weekend for the NFC title game. The average ticket price is just over $2,500. $2,500 for the 49ers-Eagles matchup.
So that's the average. I wonder what's the range, though? Like, what's the lowest? Where does it start, I wonder? You know, what do you think? Like, $700-$800 maybe for some crappy nosebleed seat or something, you know?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know, man. What event would you pay that kind of money to go to? To see, I think we're sort of jaded because we've been to a million games, and yeah, you know that's a positive in our business. We don't pay to go to the Mariners or the Seahawks, so we're kind of numb to the experience, I guess. So it's not that big of a deal. But I'm thinking even a concert or something we don't get into for free. What I can't imagine paying $2,500 for a singular event.
I guess right now in my life, and this will sound strange since I'm a football guy. If it was Game 7 and the Mariners were playing in Game 7 in the World Series, I think I would do that just for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah.
You know, I think
it would have to be something that extreme, though.
Yeah.
So cheapest ticket, according to Ticketmaster. I mean, I'm sure there's a number of resale websites, but according to Ticketmaster, cheapest ticket right now, $550 for a standing room only ticket.
Good.
$600 for the very, very top of the stadium to have a seat.
You don't even have a seat.
And then the most expensive right now, $3,050.
Oh, man. And that doesn't include your parking, which I'm sure is probably absurd out there. And then any concessions, any food, beverage that you buy there. I mean,
was it last year in the Super Bowl at SoFi? Remember the parking? It was like just absolutely outrageous. It was
I can't remember that.
It was
number.
Like between $500 and $800 or something like that. You know, it's funny with football. Like, I've been to now 3 Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
So one was at the Rose Bowl. It was Denver against New York Giants. Giants won that one. And my agent, Marvin Demoff, got me a seat. And by the way, I got a seat. I'm like at the 50-yard line. And I'm standing next to, that's not how it started. I was up in a nosebleed. I was on the 10-yard line. And there was a guy that was hurt for the Broncos. He was a tight end. He comes up. He says, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm this guy. You know, I'm on the practice squad, whatever. And he goes, I'm sorry if you don't want to do this, this is fine. But you're sitting next to my dad, and I'd like to trade tickets with you. And I'm thinking, okay, this guy's running some kind of a scam or something like that, you know. So he's like, okay, I understand. He turns around, walks off. I'm like, hey, whoa, whoa. come on, sit next to your dad. You know, this is, I'm a senior in college, and, you know, Marvin gets me this ticket. So I go down. I'm sitting on the 50-yard line, like 12 rows up, and with a bunch of Giant fans. The only thing was, it was sunny there, and they were like, back home, it's like minus 20 degrees, and it's snowing. So these guys decided to take their shirts off.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I was like, all right. But luckily, they were wearing sweaters underneath, Bob, so that was good. But I sat there and watched that game on the 10, or on the 50-yard line, 10 rows up. So, but that was my first one. Then, I, you know, you go to Super Bowl 40. And then, well, actually, I've been to four then. Okay, yeah, I forgot about that. So Super Bowl 40, where we were watching it from the stands, me and Brock, and that's the first time I think I ever heard Brock curse. And then, yeah, it was a big one. And then, you know, the two where they went back to back, the first one being the most fun experience ever, Bob.
Yep.
You and I, my mom still has a picture of you and I in that Subway picture. That, she's like, I love that Bob Skelton.
That's a great time out there. Great
we had
time.
A great time in New York. And then the next year, like, it was just okay because everything was kind of spread out. But then the result of it was just so devastating. It was just, yeah, it was just awful.
Yeah.
But I have to say, like, being at those games, I never really understood, like, they build it up on TV so much better.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just, I think it's almost better watching it on television. You know, they always say, like, hockey, you know, being there, and I agree,
better.
You know, being there, it's way better, but I feel like that's why, you know, the NFL is making so much money. They just do a great job with all the cameras and the, you know, slow replay, all that stuff. Yeah, and then the buildup and everything, and then the commercials and all that. I mean,
they've got it dialed in.
I think at 2,500, you know, so to answer your question, yeah, Mariners game seven, that's something I would pay a lot for, but because it hasn't happened. I've been to four Super Bowls, so I don't really care about that. And plus, mostly, I just think that the NFL is a much better product on television.
I agree. I agree. By the way, side note, you brought up everything that goes into the Super Bowl. I just saw an interview with a guy who puts together commercials for the half for the Super Bowl. Like he's like the creative mind for these companies. This year for a 30-second spot, $7 million.
Wow.
$7 million. For a 30-second spot. And by the way, somebody challenging Lefko, and he's responded to this guy. The 425 says, nah, Lefko, when the Sonics moved to OKC, not a damn Seattle fan maintained their support. Oilers to Titans makes no sense.
Well, what
and
was
then
the
I
feeling?
Responded. I could, you want me to read my response?
What did you say?
Well, I didn't live in Houston, so yeah, it probably would have been different. I was a kid. I lived in San Antonio. Then we immediately moved to Indiana. So all I knew was this team. I knew Warren Moon. I loved their colors. I knew this cool quarterback. I didn't know anything else, so I just kept following that team.
One of the
didn't have the hurt. If I had the betrayal, I would hate them.
One of the coolest helmets of all time.
Yeah.
The Oilers?
Uniforms.
Dave Pearson has one because he worked for the Houston Oilers. I don't know if you know that. He was their PR guy there for a while. But it's the white one with the oil derrick.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like blue and red,
Those
I think.
Those are great.
It's an awesome, yeah, awesome uniform right there. All right, so.
People are checking in with things they spend a lot of money on. This was 206, paid $350 for Jeff Beck and Johnny Depp October 3rd. Now those memories are priceless. Of course, I was front and center, they said. Obviously, Jeff Beck just passing away, so you just that is great. That's pretty darn cool. And then Robin, American Samoa, who always texts in, says, you guys are making me feel bad. I spent $3,500 per ticket to watch us lose to the New England Patriots in the desert.
I'm sorry about that, man. Sorry, Rob. That could have been so great. I mean, the catch by Curse, you know, where it's bobbling up in the air. I mean, who would have been the Super Bowl or the MVP of that, I wonder? It was remember the big tall receiver? Can't remember his name.
Chris
Matthews.
Is that right?
You
Chris
are
Matthews?
Correct.
Yeah.
Good call. So, yeah, I mean, it could have been so great, but that was just the most awful thing. Every time I go past or into that building, I get sick to
knot
my stomach.
Your stomach. Yeah.
And when we go down to Peoria, we'll most likely be taking an Uber, cab, whatever, right past that building. And
I thought Lefko was driving us around.
I just got the car, so you feel free to do whatever.
Oh, Lefko, you rented a car?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Everybody.
For you too, Dave.
No, it's going to be he's going to be our chauffeur.
I guess that's why the car is in my name.
Driver, take us to McDonald's.
We're actually staying in Glendale, so yeah.
By the way, the 360 says the words fairly articulate and Dave Wyman rarely collide in the same sentence. That's from Colin.
Well, Bob, did you see the live and end one?
I didn't. I can't find
425, it. 425. I paid $2,500 for the live and end concert one time, showed up, and there was no show.
That was you, Bob.
Yeah. There was huge demand for us, and we no-showed. Just took all the money and ran, I guess. I don't know. I'd say if you paid $2,500, you paid probably $2,499 too much for that show. Yeah. So we apologize. Yeah, that's... Boy, everybody's coming in with different things they've spent money on. I spent $375 on a comic book, says the 425. Okay. Which one? Was that like a rare Spider-Man? I know those things are crazy valuable when you start seeing the price tags on like the, you know, first edition of this and first, you know, the very first Spider-Man, the very first Wolverine, and all these are just crazy valuable.
I wonder if I have any of those like just in a bin somewhere in storage or something like that, or like, you know, baseball cards or whatever. You know, some people just find these things that are just entire.
Just laying around.
They didn't know.
See what kind of condition it's in.
Yeah.
But all right, coming up, it's the biggest mystery of the year. What happened to the Seahawks defense? We'll continue diving into the mystery surrounding the Seahawks team from this past season. That is coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Dave, people still sending in things they paid for, that they may have overpaid for. 907 said, I didn't pay anything for your podcast. Still overpaid. That's a mean text. We should have saved
that
for Friday.
It's also impossible. You can't overpay with nothing. What about, can you read the one that the guy said about?
Yeah, the 253 says, I've spent $16 a month for garbage for 20 years to throw away my dog poop just to figure out I can use Dave's yard for free.
I told him eventually I would have shot him in the butt with my BB gun, though.
And then he wrote back, worth it, LOL.
If you would have done it every month or every week, I would have tracked you down.
You would have been out in the bushes, your face painted in that camouflage face paint. You're wearing fatigues.
And you'd have a bunch of, what do they call that? The welts or whatever from, you know, when you get shot with a BB gun.
Yeah.
All over your butt.
You see Dave just in there, just he's looking like Rambo in the bushes, blending in with the shrubbery.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right. Well, let's continue with the biggest mysteries of the year surrounding the Seahawks team. And the biggest has to be the defense. I mean, that's not even close, really, because it was the most uneven thing about this team. They got off to a terrible start. We all celebrate and praise the four-game stretch in the middle of the season where they look like a completely different defense, and then it fell apart again in a big way. And there was nothing gradual about the ascension or the decline. Nothing gradual. They were very abrupt.
It was abrupt.
What happened, Dave?
Well, what about Geno, though? I mean, you're saying this is by far the biggest mystery?
I think it is, because it was so extreme and it was so up and down.
Well, and somebody texted in earlier, and I refuted what they said. Surprise. You know, he was saying, well, look, it was, the Chargers and the Giants were good, but the Arizona was trash. Well, it wasn't about the opponents. It really wasn't. It was just about, like, because if you look at opponents, there's no way that Tampa Bay runs for 161 yards on them.
Worst rushing team in the league.
They had games where they were running the ball like three times, nine times, six times. So they weren't even running it. So it wasn't about the opponents. It was about the way they played. And it was such a stark difference because, you know, how do you go from, and albeit the last game was against Arizona, and the one texter was saying, well, they weren't very good. But to me, it was still about the way that they played their gaps. And, you know, all of a sudden you get into the Tampa game and there were plays where there were not enough guys up in the box, you know, to support the. So I don't know. There was lots of things that went on there. But my point is that there was something about their technique there that was totally different. Now, you can miss a bunch of tackles, things like that, and that could lead to, you know, lots of yards. But this was about they weren't attacking the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And then for 4 weeks. They did. They did do that. There was a difference. And even Quandre Diggs was able to sort of identify what the problem was.
I mean, when you continue to build every week the way we've been building, you know, it's kind of, you expect it now. That's what you expect. So when you give up a play here and there, you're like, come on, that's not us. You know what I mean? So I don't know when I expect it. I just know, you know, it just kind of switched, you know. And when our big guys were able to go out there and just eat and, you know, not worry about, you know, two gapping and they can just be aggressive, I think that just turned them up to another notch. And, you know, that's what they asked for, and that's what, you know, I would also recommend it. So we knew we had to take a next step, and, you know, it was going to be on us. If it didn't work, it was going to be on us, so we didn't have no more excuses.
So it's not on the coaches, it's on the players that it fell apart, because they said they asked for it, it's on them, and it paid off in those four games, and then I don't know what they asked for after that, but it
didn't. Well, he said they let the big guys eat, and there was no more two-gap. These guys were just able to hit their gaps. There we go. I mean, I think he identified that, and I don't know if, you know.
Why did it change? Why did it go back?
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe it's that, you know, it didn't stop everything, and people were maybe going to pick up on it and say, find different ways to, you know, to exploit your defense.
But playing the chess game.
Yeah, so I really don't think it was the opponents.
Hey, one aspect of the defense we didn't get to as part of the mystery, but is kind of a mystery, was your guy, Cody Barton.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like the defense in that he's got very extreme highs and lows.
Yeah.
You know, where you'll see him and you come in and you're like, look, that was brilliant. He played, what a great game he played. And then you'll come in the next week and go, I don't know what he was doing. I don't understand what was happening. But it didn't seem like there was a lot of gray area. It was like he was up here or he was way down here. Yeah. So how do you explain Cody Barton's season? And this is an important season for him. Because he's a free agent.
Yeah.
You know, this is him saying, guys, you want me back here. And he got a lot of opportunity, a ton of opportunity this year.
I know. He just went the way of the defense, you know, and I feel like, look, I played in 3-4 and 4-3, and I don't know if I'd had more success in one or the other, but it was on him. It was on him. I mean, because there were still some things that, you know, and look, you know, running the 3-4, maybe it's not something that was best for him, but you should be able to adapt to both. But, you know, and the thing that people were screaming about was, to me, was that you said he was good. Well, he was good. I mean, we looked at it, mm-hmm. You know, everybody, you know, that looks at where he played and how he played and, you know, during the time that he was sitting on the bench wouldn't have said anything other. But then this year, for whatever reason, he was like kind of the poster boy for the defense because it was very up and down by him. But, you know, and he had some good plays. I mean, look at remember the last game, the tackle on Cam Akers in that first series to stop him. And they had to kick a field goal in that situation. It was just a brilliant, great tackle, awesome, good speed. Picks off Tom Brady, picks off the pass that ends the Los Angeles Rams comeback. I mean, there was lots of things that he did that were really good. But, man, there was also, what was the girl with the curl in the middle of her head? My mom used to tell that little thing that when she was good, she was really, really good. And when she was bad, she was horrid or something like that.
I'm not familiar with that.
I'm going to look that one up. But I'm telling you,
curl
it was
in
like,
the middle of her head.
Yeah, it was something about, like, he was really, when it was really good, he was really good and vice versa. So, yeah, he didn't play well in a couple of games, but he played well in a few. It just had happened to sort of coincide with when things were going good for the defense.
What about the idea that he's a decidedly more impactful player as a middle linebacker than he is when he's playing the weak side? Because that's problematic in that Jordan Brooks is your middle linebacker.
Yeah.
So that opportunity doesn't really exist unless Brooks takes a longer to heal. They need to decide if they're bringing Cody back or not. Well, and then B, okay, if Jordan's going to take a bit with the injury, then Cody can step in. But if he is back and he's ready to go, talking about Brooks, what does that mean for Cody?
Well, I think he played the weak side in the 4-3 okay. He played fine then. And then, you know, I thought at that point, though, he was better when he filled in for Bobby. Because remember at the end of the year when he filled in against Detroit and Arizona in 2021, yeah, he played really well in those games. But that was in the 4-3. You know, and we didn't see him play middle linebacker, the Mike, in the 3-4 a whole lot. You know, so we didn't really get a sense for that. But I do think he's more comfortable there. So, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, if they come back with the 3-4 and, you know, they want to run it with the same guys, maybe they switch those two guys. I don't know. It might be something that if Cody plays better there and Jordan plays better at Will, then, you know, he could still call the huddle as a Will.
Do you have a sense of how they feel about Cody?
I think if they could find somebody better right now, that would be my guess, that they would sign him as a free agent. I think, you know, they've kind of given Cody that shot, but I don't know. You never know. I mean, maybe they look at the end of the year. I know that this is what happened, you know, when we ran a two gap, and I remember the coach comes to me and says, you know, hey, look, this wasn't really on you. It was on me. We're going to play this differently, and I think you can fit into this. You know, maybe that's what happens. But it seemed to, I just thought it was weird that it went the way of the defense, that like when they were trying to two gap and read things that it really confused Cody. But I'll say this, that didn't account for a lot of the things though, where he should have got an interception and he didn't, because he was looking at the wrong, he was looking at the, to hit the receiver. He should have made a tackle that he didn't make. I mean, those didn't have anything to do with the scheme.
Right.
Those had to do with him being inconsistent.
All right, coming up, it's a mystery from this past season that could affect the Seahawks offseason. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
We've been trying to unravel the mysteries of the Seahawks team from this season. Hitting different aspects of the team that just... You know, you couldn't provide a real answer. You just sit there going, what is happening? What happened here? And some good, some bad. Defense, not good. But this one, very good. A huge, huge mystery as to what got into Geno Smith. A guy who was a career backup outside of his first 2 years in New York. Thrown more career interceptions than career touchdowns coming into this season. And then goes 30-11, touchdown interception ratio, completes almost 70% of his passes, over 4,000 yards, and plays unlike any point in his career that he had ever played.
Not only that, his attempts were eighth most in the league. So they relied on him a lot of times when you would think, hey, you bring him along and, you know, we'll have him throw 20. And remember all those years when Russ was 21 for 25.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. And... yeah, that's kind of what Brock Purdy looks like. But Geno was out there slinging it 33 times a game.
Well, so, and that some of that, I think, is because of the way they talked. I mean, they talked about wanting to get back to that run-heavy offense. Those were the words of Pete. And, you know, so they kind of created the expectation that, all right, not that you're going to, you know, he's going to throw it 18 times a game, but that it was going to be a very run-heavy offense, and it just didn't really turn out that way.
Yeah, and there was lots of times where, you know, Geno had to make up for it, and the one that comes to mind was at the Rams, and, you know, and that was one where, once again, it, you know, our defense gave up a lot of yards to a team that wasn't very good running the ball. But then, you know, the injuries, I think, really got that, you know, mm-hmm. as far as the mysteries on the offensive side of the ball. Injuries, you could chalk that up, but they had to rely heavily on Geno. I think that was one where he threw, let's say it was north of 350, you know, somewhere in the 300s anyway. And I know he threw one to Fan. Of course, he threw one to DK. You know, I mean, that was like, if without Geno, Geno saved the game. You know, mm-hmm. he had the game-winning drive. So, yeah, the fact that you went to a guy who turned the ball over 41 times his first 2 years and 29 starts, that he was able to come back and have, you know, good numbers. He had less interceptions than, you know, Aaron Rodgers and, you know, Tom Brady and a lot of good players. And, you know, threw 30 touchdowns, which was number three. It was just unbelievable, the transformation. Now, maybe even the bigger mystery, Bob, is whether he can do that again. A, can he do it again? And B, can he, or something like that, I would say. B, can he do it somewhere else?
Yeah, because both are a reality. Well, A, whether he re-signs here or signs elsewhere, that's going to be the expectation, that they're going to get something very close to what he was this past season. That's who you're paying for. If he's going to make the big bucks, if he's going to get 25, 30, 35 million, which I don't, I'd be surprised if he did, but maybe he will. That you better play to that level. That's the expectation. There can't be, you know, he kind of dipped a little bit toward the end. You were talking about, what, four interceptions through the first 10 games or something along that those lines? I mean, very few.
Four in the first 10 and then four in the next five, I think. Something like that.
Yeah,
at
so
that
he
point.
Ends with, you know, 11 interceptions.
Yeah.
Interceptions. So he, you know, the completion percentage went down, the turnovers went up, and you're going, all right, is this the league figuring him out? Is this a guy who's just gotten, who's become very comfortable within this offense and is now taking more chances than he did in the beginning of the season? Is
Could
it
be.
Maybe
well,
it's a combination of the two? I don't really know.
And this happens all the time in baseball, and I guess we don't make that big of a deal out of it, but sometimes guys have finished with a bad month. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, didn't Paul Sewald finish with a crappy month?
I don't know if it was the whole month, but there were some crucial games that did not go his way.
Yeah, and then, you know, we had some guys that finished, you know, their last month was a good one. But, I mean, players go in cycles, right? And, you know, I don't think we ever make a big deal out of, you know, Paul Sewald having a huge, you know, down month. So, I mean, it doesn't always connect. Sometimes it's just the player. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, I had a bad month.
Yeah. Well, problem is you have so few opportunities in the NFL. You got one chance a week versus, you know, playing multiple games a week in baseball to get things turned around. They mean so much more.
Hmm.
You know, one football game is the equivalent of, what, 10 baseball games.
Well, I guess if you suck, you suck. You know,
if you're having a
crappy down period of time, you get lots of plays. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're out there for, you know, 40, 50, 60 plays, whatever it is. So, yeah, you get a lot more opportunities, I would say, to make in football than in baseball. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's anything to him declining at the end or not. I don't think it's a given that, yeah, he's headed the wrong way. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, this is why it's a mystery, because, you know, I think my biggest question is, can he do anything close to this again somewhere else? And I'm not saying that this is a totally magical place. All you have to do is move here, play quarterback for the Seahawks, and you'll have like a resurgent year or whatever. Yeah, but
didn't work for Whitehurst.
Yeah, there you go.
Didn't work for him.
Who we paid, what, $7 million?
He got a lot of money to
They
do.
Were trying to figure it out back then.
Ooh.
That's what they, you know, like kind of Pete's thing where, they got through it. They were trying to figure things out.
I'd say Charlie didn't get through it.
Charlie did not get through it.
He did not get through it, man.
No, he didn't work out.
Obviously, the old Matt Flynn didn't work out. They paid him a pretty good chunk of change to come here, you know, but that's when they found Russ. So that kind of took some of the sting out of that signing.
Yeah.
Is that you got your starter paying him third round rookie money, and the guy you paid to come as your starter obviously did not play.
Turns out with Charlie Whitehurst also, he's a bit of a turd.
Is he?
Yeah.
Was he a bad guy?
I heard that from somebody.
Yeah. You know what he's got to gripe about? He's not getting hit because he's not playing and he's making millions of dollars. He didn't even have to mess up his hair or take a shower.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was fine. But yeah, Gino, it's you know, just the history, you know, that preceded this season, I think will be what keeps him from reaching that upper echelon level of money. He's going to make tens of millions of dollars. He's going to make a lot of money.
What do you think is going to keep him from making it?
The previous seasons,
yeah.
his resume that led up to this season, because I think that's going to create doubt in the minds of some going, all right, this is great. We want him. But do I believe it to the point that I'm going to invest $35 million a year for 3 years or whatever that number. I don't see that happening. But, hey, if I'm wrong, kudos to him, man. He's put himself in a great position coming out of nowhere to put up those numbers, and we'll see if it gets him paid to the extent he thinks he should be paid. And we're not entirely sure what that is.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll see how it plays out with, and I think a lot of people are worrying about both sides as far as be careful what you say, you know, and I don't think the Seahawks need that advice. They've never.
So as not to insult him, you mean?
To not insult him. Be careful what you say during the negotiation process. And, you know, for Gino, he might need that. I don't know. He's putting things out there. There's been nothing nasty or anything like that, right? Nothing negative towards the Seahawks. I think
just cryptic.
Yeah.
Stuff we were all going, well, what does that mean?
Right.
what that could be negative. Well, it could be positive. We don't know. We got no idea.
Hey, we picked up a big win today, by the way.
Who's we, number one?
The show.
Okay.
All of us. 425 texted in. Now I want to watch Unsolved Mysteries.
That's a win for us.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Well, I'll be waiting for our royalty check from whoever.
We got it
that.
Ingrained in his or her mind because of how much they were listening. So good job, guys.
253 saying after Russ, nobody trusts a Hawks quarterback.
What do you mean?
I think talking about other teams investing in Geno because he's coming from the Hawks, you're not going to trust him because of what happened. You know, Russ only had a decade of success and Pro Bowl after Pro Bowl, Super Bowl win. So, yeah, you're right.
Well,
that makes sense.
They're saying that it's Pete. It's all 100% Pete.
Yeah, but the script is completely flipped. You had one guy who had a decade of success
right.
versus a guy that had a decade of futility in 1 year of success. So, you know. Come on.
It'll be interesting to see where his career goes. I mean, we don't have any reason to root against him anymore, do we?
No.
I mean, some people who are bitter, but, you know, you got Geno as backup to come in and play really well. So it's not like, you know, we went to the playoffs. Yeah. Yeah. I don't see where there's any reason to.
Pettiness.
Yeah. Pettiness. He left us.
Yeah.
So screw him.
Spurned lover syndrome, Dave. That's what it is. All right. Coming up, Paul Moyer will weigh in on the Seahawks defense, and we might even learn about his musical tastes. Who knows? It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.